And welcome to the M2 Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Anthony, and my co-host right here is Kyle Heath. This is the show where we cover this week's gaming industry related news. We're talking new and upcoming games, technology innovation, general gaming industry related news, and sometimes we dabble with the esports and personalities, don't you think?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. Without further ado, Kyle, what have you been up to, man? How has your week been? How was the weekend? Did you do anything or play any games?
Yeah. I don't know. Weekend was good. I was kind of just a little bit of work, spent some time with the fam. Called some football. Just even this past weekend, my mom went to Clemson, so the football team doing like their spring game. They do like once every off season, so we were just kind of chilling out and watching that. And just getting excited for, I guess, September, but yeah, I did some of that, a little bit of work, and then I think in the past couple days, I was able to spend some more time on Smite, which was pretty fun.
Oh, very nice.
I got some more Smite in. Wanted to get some Domination in, because that's what we played last time. However, unfortunately, Domination, we were not able to find a match. We found like one game, and then after that, it was like, it seemed like the queue was just almost dead. So we switched over to Slash, played some of that, had some fun on the 5v5 mode. But yeah, dude, got some more time in there, which is awesome. So very happy about that. In terms of games, I think that was all I really played this week. I don't think I played too much else. Kind of doing my thing otherwise, I think. But what about you, Mike? You playing Rocket League, playing some Halo? What are we doing?
I haven't been playing much of anything, and it's been making me like really sad. I've had a bunch of anxiety, and I've always used gaming. You're probably the same way as me. It's like gaming is a good outlet.
Yeah.
Like whether it's just to go back into a nostalgic type of thing, going back and like playing old games, or just like, man, just I don't even know. Just let the stress out. So I've just had other stuff going on that have been taking the lead on things. However, it's been beneficial. So it's like I'm getting things that I need to get done, things that I've been like postponing. And I've just been like, you know what, let's just take care of it now. Let's get it done. Like that's been my whole mission probably this month. It's probably because the weather's getting nicer. What's it called? Like spring cleaning in a way.
Yeah. So,
yeah, that's basically what I've been up to. But if I had to say gaming, I mean, I really want to get back on Helldivers like really bad. That's happening this weekend. And I don't care if it means like pushing off priorities, like that's going to be a priority. It's going to the top of the list gaming. But I have been playing the original Xbox again, Halo 2, and playing on Insignia. So I just got on a couple of times, like throwing on some videos or whatever. It's only been like one night, but I threw in a couple of videos to like learn a little bit about sports gambling. Sports betting. So I got it up on like one monitor, and then I'm just playing like Halo 2 Team Slayer with ranks. Just kind of vibing. It's mostly been watching sports, man. Like I got the Everton hat on. They're in trouble right now. For anybody that follows the Premier League, they know. But the Canes are doing pretty good. They're winning games. They're playing well. And it's almost playoff season, dude.
It is. I was thinking about the other day, like NBA, obviously Hornets are eliminated. But otherwise, I mean, like, right, this is the last week of regular season, and the next week's play-ins for a playoff. So, yeah, we're here, you know. it's an exciting time for sports, like the second most exciting time of the year.
It 100% is. I actually, like, this isn't a sports betting place, but it just became legal in North Carolina. So I'm, like, excited. One of my buddies, who we've actually, like, interviewed on the show before, he put in a bet of, like, $100 for Luka to hit get the first basket, and the first basket being a three-pointer. It was like he got $2,700 for that hitting. I saw him post it, and he like does line shopping and stuff like that, and I was just like, what's $10? You know, it's just like with today's inflation, that's like, dude, $10 is a soda at like a restaurant in downtown. So I was like, all right, let's go for it. I mean, and bam, $270. I'm like,
the heck? I mean, you know, Luka out here, he's every time I see those stat lines of Mavs after those games end, he's triple doubles, double doubles.
Like, dude's 40 on fire, points. Man.
Yeah, he's cold, man. He's cold. So,
yeah, it is really cool to see. Just, I think what you and I've been doing most is just watching sports. I'm glad I got you into the hockey.
Yeah,
you know, get you into the NHL. It's you get to watch like a good team, and it's pretty cool to see.
This is true. Yeah.
NFL season's picking back up. I think I'm more excited for like college sports, and you know, college esports. That needs to come up to the like the forefront.
I want
to
start seeing that on TV. You know what I'm saying? That'd be sick.
I think that's the future. It's going to take some time, but it's going to be the future. Because if you think about it, like, you know, all the problems that we mentioned about the franchise leagues and the affordability.
Yeah.
I think with esports being in college, like the colleges, for them to remain nonprofit, they're spending all their money, right? They've been spending money building a new football stadium or renovating a basketball arena every like year or two, or like rebuilding and doing all these luxury amenities for every single one of the dorms. So they got money to spend. It's like esports teams are net negative almost always. So
yeah. I mean, yeah.
Take that money and start, you know, build up the team.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that should be the future of esports, my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I hate to say, but certainly not wrong. It could be could be the future, but oh man. Got some stuff to get through though, Mike.
Yes, we do. By the way, how's everything going with the recording so far?
Everything looks good. I see Discord for a little brief second. It was kind of like the audio was fantastic, but the video got a little choppy. Okay. But I think we're back, so we're good.
Okay.
OBS, chilling though. If we post to pre-shows, we probably couldn't post what was going on YouTube, put it that way.
Yeah, true.
Oh man. Anyways, we got some articles to get to, Mike. That's why we're here. So
let's get to it, brother.
So we're starting off with ABC News. This is an article that was covered by ABC. That's how significant this was. But I'm going to read through it real quick. Some parents are sharing warnings after their son spends $4,000 playing video games. Sometimes it's confusing as to what's real money and what's fake money. This is from the Good Morning America team. This is on Good Morning America. parents Michael and Jennifer Ferry are speaking out and sharing a warning for other parents after they learned that their 8-year-old son unintentionally racked up $4,000 in charges on their credit card while playing video games. I mean, I lost my mind, Jennifer Ferry told Good Morning America after finding out about the unexpected charges her son Joey had made. After months, the Ferrises were finally able to get a full refund, but they said their experience is a precautionary tale. Got a full refund, Mike. That's pretty nuts.
That's wild, dude.
I think sometimes it's confusing as to what's real money and what's fake money, Michael Ferry said. According to a July 23, 2023 report by the Entertainment Software Association, which represents the video game industry, more than 200 million Americans and about 3 out of every 4 children under 18 play video games regularly. An estimated $57 billion are spent on video games every year, according to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the government agency responsible for safeguarding Americans' finances. Now, the CFPB is warning in a new report that Americans may not have the same protections online and in the virtual world as they do in the real world. Quote, we want to make sure it's not a haven for fraud, scams, and abuse. Rohit Chopra. Chopra? I guess I said that right.
Yeah, it looks right.
Rohit.
That's how I would pronounce it.
Rohit. Anyway, the director of the CFPB told ABC News' Elizabeth Schultz. The CFPB report highlights how using virtual currency to buy coveted in-game items such as vehicles, weapons, and characters could put players' money at risk. What's pretty obvious is that video game companies' financial incentives are for players to spend as much as possible. According to the CFPB, gaming accounts often lack security protections of traditional bank accounts and can leave them vulnerable to hacking, account theft, scams, and unauthorized transactions. When we have a fraudulent charge on our credit card, we can fight it. Many times you see that these gaming platforms, they're really just finger pointing or not really taking accountability. I think we shouldn't think of this as traditional video games. It is an immersive world with its own economy. But what we want to make sure of is that it's not just a way to sidestep existing rules. The Entertainment Software Association told GMA in a statement, we are committed to providing players and parents with transparent information and tools to make appropriate choices for themselves and their families, including the ability to manage in-game purchases, limit or block communications with the players, and manage when and for how long their children can play. parents can turn on parental controls on video games to block or restrict money kids can spend while playing video games. Parents can also consider linking a child's account to a prepaid gift card instead of a credit or debit card. Okay, you're giving some suggestions to these parents, Mike. What do we think, though? Do you think if little Jimmy goes on to his Fortnite account and he's blowing hundreds of dollars on skins, who do you think's at fault there in the kind parents. Of dynamic of it, right? The parents.
The parents. 100% it's the parents' fault. Like, I totally get what this parent is saying when he says, sometimes it's confusing as to what's real money and what's fake money. And that's their entire intention. That's the whole reason why you're like, let's convert to in-game currency. You buy the in-game currency.
They get the
and then
V-Bucks.
They use that. Yeah, and then they use that for like the lottery system that they had. Like microtransactions in the lotto system has kind of gone away in a lot of games because of the outrage of the players. But I mean, dude, $4,000 playing a video game? They're obviously not saying which game, but I mean, we can kind of assume it's one of the big three. It's either Roblox, Minecraft, or Fortnite. It's an 8-year-old kid.
Yeah.
And I get it. From a parent's perspective, it might look like a kid game, but it's like every single one of these games you can buy and spend whatever you want. I mean, it's really bad on mobile phones and their mobile games. But I don't know how do you get a refund for that?
How the
credit card bureau basically say, or like, they don't really say how they got the refund. I mean, obviously, it's kind of mainstream media. They want you to kind of click, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's like, the real message of the article isn't about how it's sharing a warning of $4,000. I think it's more about like, hey, the bureau is looking into doing a report on protecting people online for these types of scams. But I mean, I don't know. What do you think, man? Do you think this is like the business's fault? I think the businesses are just doing what businesses do.
Yeah,
I mean, they're not going to say no to money.
Right. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I totally agree with that. I think ultimately it's like there's going to be a time period when you have to kind of adapt with circumstances almost. Like for these gaming things, it gets to a point where like parents and, you know, and guardians just kind of need to learn like, you know, this is kind of what happens in these games and this is what you should be, you know, teaching your kids to watch out for. And you know, it is a good point about like, you know, the fake currency, right? The V-Bucks, the Apex coins on Apex Legends, like, you know, whatever currency on whatever game.
It's trying to detach you from the reality that you're spending real money.
Exactly,
you know, like some people, it's one of the reasons why credit cards are such a big deal. Like if you have cold hard cash in your hands, then you have an emotional, like physical attachment to the money. Whereas a card, it's just a piece of plastic you're scanning.
Yeah. It's exactly it. And so, you know, if you're able to remove that emotional connection, I mean, that's obviously going to give kind of the highest rate of, you know, spending incentive. It's like, you know, it's the reason why we don't use dollar amounts. It's also the reason why, you know, there's some people too that are kind of weird about that stuff. I know like some people, if it's like a digital number, they're more attached to it than the cash. I guess everyone works differently. I agree. A majority though is like, if you're using cash or dollars, like it's going to hurt more. Right. So it's going to incentivize you to spend less, but yeah, no, I mean, that's totally the thing because it's like, you know, as an adult, like I look at some of the stuff and it's like, you know, I'm able to see like if I'm in the store trying to buy coins or tokens or something like that, I immediately see like, oh, this is like $20, $30, $50 worth. But it doesn't seem like that much in the virtual currency, so it's like, why would I buy that kind of thing? But yeah, you know, to you know a kid, it's, you know, less significant. So you're just click a buy now, 100%. And then you get all these tokens, and then it's like, oh, okay, I'm not, you know, it's like, it is what it is. So you kind of get that hit up front. But yeah, you know, well, it's on the parents, right?
100%. And I hope that people understand, like, I know from my memory when I was a kid under the age of 18 and I had to use my parents' card for like the map packs and stuff that were in COD or Halo or stuff, you actually had to put in a password most of the time because my account was listed as like a child account because I wasn't of 18 years old yet. It wasn't an adult permissions account until like later when I basically begged and pleaded with parents to allow that to happen. So you can do that now. That was like 20 years ago, basically. Yeah. So it's like you should be able to do that now on any platform to just say like, okay, you need an extra password that only the parent knows to authorize purchasing extra V-Bucks or in-game currencies or just game add-ons. Like, yep. This shouldn't be an issue at all. So to have this $4,000, man, your 8-year-old kid did that and you had no idea, that just tells me you're a bad parent. And to go online and basically, not even online, like, you're going on national news and basically blaming the company, like, bro, you're crazy.
Yeah,
it's not my kid's fault. No, duh, it's your fault. Like, how did they get the card?
Yeah, how do they
little get the Joey card? 8-year-old Joey doesn't have a credit card, bro.
It's like, you get the card, you're going on there, you're spending it, you're not monitoring the transactions, you're not keeping up with the finances. It's like, this
not
is,
being a parent easily,
exactly, like, you know, you're not disciplined. It's this thing, man. Like, it is kind of weird. It's a weird dynamic, right? Like, when you see, like, these parents and stuff going Good Morning America, it's like, obviously, like, I think their goal is trying to advocate to be like, hey, like, you should pay more attention to this stuff and so this doesn't happen to you, kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, yeah, there is kind of a weird kind of thing about it too, where it's like, are they just doing it for attention, or do they actually, like, is it really just all about the message, kind of thing? It is, yeah, pretty interesting. Yeah,
yeah. I think if you put your credit card into anything, you should kind of know, like, hey, how does this activate? I know Amazon purchasing and stuff like that, super simple. You literally hit one button, say buy now, and it'll ship automatically.
Yeah, it's like first address.
Boom. Yeah.
Like,
but you can change that. So yeah, take accountability for your actions.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, it goes to the idea of, like, make the more difficult choices or make the easier choices, add more friction to it, kind of thing. I know it's like talked about in a bunch of, like, different books out there, like, you know, self-help. I know Atomic Habits, I think, talks about it too, James Clear, where it talks about adding frictions over the bad habits makes it so you're less likely to indulge in those bad habits, and then, you know, making the harder things easier to get to, or less friction.
We could definitely go down philosophical route.
It'd be nice for these companies to be like, parental controls, sure, like the Xbox parental controls thing. It'd be sick, but probably not gonna do it.
The parental controls on Xbox are actually pretty good, because they'll close off an entire, it's kind of like how YouTube has YouTube for kids. It'll close off, like, an entire adult section that would normally be like it's a limited experience, a limited membership, and it'll limit everything and give one parent account full autonomy over that child account.
Yeah.
And that's, I don't know, that's just so obvious.
Yeah. And if you want to buy something, guess what? Parent has entered the code.
Like, 100%, yeah.
So that's, you know, need consent. So, yeah.
And tell your kids no. $4,000? Bro.
Sorry, Joey. Maybe next millennium. Yeah. Next year. I don't know.
Get them in the factories. You want to spend that money? I'm just kidding. That's so mean.
Well, we can talk about the games industry some more. Some more positive notes, Mike. You know?
Oh, I love more positive stories. This is one that you found. It's from TechCrunch by Mike Butcher. And the title of the article is Against Games Industry Doldrums, Bitcraft Ventures Raises $275 million to Back Studios and Platforms. So this is a pretty interesting one. More studios. Is it a hedge fund kind of thing? A games investor?
That's what it seems like. Almost like it's ventures. I just think it's like a VC, right?
Yeah, like, you know, yeah, that's true. Venture capitalists.
Yeah.
All right, let me just go ahead and start getting into this. It's a pretty short article. We can probably just read it off real nice and quick. So Bitcraft Ventures, the name of the a games investor based out of Denver, Colorado. I've actually noticed that there's a lot of new, like, tech companies coming out of Denver or being based in Denver. I don't know if you've noticed that, because we're kind of in the same industry, and I've noticed there's, like, a lot of tech companies going out to Denver right now.
Yeah. I mean, Denver, what I hear is a nice area, so.
Dude, it's sick. I think Boulder's the better one, and there's some nearby cities that are pretty sick, too. But, yeah, Denver's awesome. Highly recommend visiting. So, So a games investor based out of Denver, Colorado, but with European founders, is raising its third fund, coming in at $275 million. Holy smokes. The fund will make seed and Series A investments in gaming studios and platforms to support game production. The moves come at a time when games investments have actually declined 72% year on year, which makes a lot of sense because of all the layoffs that we've been covering the last year. Interest rates and venture capitalists have basically left the scene, and the indie devs are trying to do crowdfunding. Yeah. So this is a good opportunity at a weird time. So very interesting. So this is funded by games industry veteran Jens Hilgers, which is Bitcraft has over 130 companies in its portfolio and more than $1 billion in assets under management. So the VC is an investor in the Frost Giant Studio, which Hilgers seemed particularly excited about. So Frost Giant, this is a quote from, I believe it is from Hilgers. So that's correct. Yeah, from Hilgers. So Frost Giant has set out to build a successor in the real-time strategy space. The team had previously been involved in building StarCraft, and they're now launching a game called Stormgate, which I think we've covered or we've talked about on the show.
Yeah, it sounds familiar, yeah.
That's really ringing a bell right now. Trying to click on it quick. Yeah, Stormgate. Yeah, it looks very familiar. Looks like it's on PlayStation 2. So, Stormgate. It's highly anticipated and has a great early, has had great early reviews. That is a good example of the type of games company they want to invest in. So other investments that they've included are Anzu, which is an in-game ad platform, Carry First, a mobile gaming platform focused in Africa, In World, a social media platform, Karate Combat, a martial arts league, and Immutable, which is the creator of God's Unchained crypto-based game. I don't know how I feel about crypto now, but I mean, we're back. Bitcoin's up, baby. To the moon. All right, so they said that the firm's LP base is a mix of family offices and institutional funds and confirmed a major global sportswear player as an LP, but was not at liberty to release the name. So the quote is, the strategy we pursued with the second fund is about 30-35 companies, average ticket size about $4 million, 50% of initial capital and 50% follow-on. That strategy has looked successful so far. We're rated top decile. Decile, I think it is.
Docile, that's all I think of, but it's not
docile. Decile, let me...
Rated top docile.
Listen. Decile.
Decile.
Okay. I have to highlight the word, right-click it, and then it plays back. So we're rated top decile in the latest Cambridge Associates rankings, and we're happy with that performance. So perhaps the best way of positioning BitCraft is to compare it to Play Ventures in Singapore, which has raised $222.9 million across four funds, but also invests across several types of game platforms. So that's pretty interesting to see, I believe, this new-ish expansion of a games investor coming on board and getting involved.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting too. You know, Frost Giant. Like they're working with Frost Giant. And you know, they're talking about it's kind of the real time strategy space. So it doesn't seem like RTS is like pretty niche, I would say. Like it's not, you know, obviously there's a
I think so, yeah.
But I would think kind of over the general, like, you know, if you're trying to, most investors I feel like if they're trying to get into gaming, it's like, oh, give me the, you know, the the real live service, like 5-6 year lifespan game that I can really rack in the microtransactions. But they're just 100%. Saying like, let's just go with something like that's proven that we know is a good product and kind of, you know, something that's, you know, could still bring a decent amount of income, I'm sure. But yeah, I think it's cool that they're going for something like RTS and yeah, just kind of seeing all that. And seeing like the other investors too, like an in-game ad platform, it's kind of interesting too. I hear about kind of those tools and we've heard, you know, kind of recently, like over, especially in the past year about like trying to develop some sort of like in-game ad system for certain titles. Yes. And it's like really kind of weird and who knows how it'll work kind of thing. And see, some of the weirdest in-game ads, like it's like the monster, and like Death Stranding and stuff like that. I felt was just like so like strange. But yeah. At the same time, like, I mean, I guess it kind of worked. So yeah, I mean, I don't know, maybe that's something kind of related to it, but. I mean, it's cool to see, you know, these giant funds are still willing to, you know, give some of this money to the game industry and try to make some good products. So, I mean, it's certainly exciting in that regard to see what kind of impact something like this could have.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I think just the most enticing or the most interesting thing about this is there's this firm that has funded $275 million. At a time when there's massive layoffs and there's even predicted more layoffs in the industry in the future. So it's kind of surprising to see more than anything, but it's also, I think, a good thing because there are a lot of developers that are struggling. So perhaps this could be an opportunity for maybe one or two studios that are lacking funding right now to strike up a business deal, a partnership to get their game off the ground. And who knows, we could have like the next major new unique game from something like this. We just don't know. So it's good to see. I think I don't know too much about them, but I'm trying to be optimistic.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. You know, try to be optimistic. I think overall it's cool to see. It does give me hope too that they're doing it, like you're saying, in a time where the industry is just like seems so upside down, right? So
100%, yes,
makes you want to be more optimistic about stuff like this. That, you know, we're pumping money back into it, but you know, you gotta make some good products, Mike. So at the end of the day, it's, you know, gotta fund some good stuff, you know. So
yes, sir. So what do you got next for us? Next article of discussion?
Maybe. We're talking about a quote-unquote new studio. It's a studio that's actually been kind of, you know, ongoing for a few years now, but they're finally talking about kind of their main project they've been working on. So it's come from gamesindustry.biz. Brandon Sinclair.
Oh, covered his stuff all the time.
Yeah.
I think we actually have... Do we have two of his stuff? No, we don't. We have somebody else that we've also covered. Sorry about that. Keep going.
Anyways, gamesindustry.biz, you know, one of the best sources out there for gaming news. So probably Monsters Unveiled Hidden Grove. Harold Ryan talks about company's expansion with a new team headed up by former Destiny design lead Chris Opdahl. Just going to say Opdahl. Way to go, Chris. That's the guy. Oh, nice little picture of some of the team members here. So probably Monsters has had a long and eventful life for a company that has yet to ship a game. First established by former Bungie CEO Harold Ryan in 2016 and announced to the world in 2019, the AAA game development outfit has launched three studios, Cauldron, Firewalk, and Battle Barge. They sold one, Firewalk, to publishing partner Sony, canceled the debut project for another, Cauldron, and today announced another studio that is now hiring, Hidden Grove. A little branch off there. Given the widespread contradictions the industry has seen the past year, probably Monster's own willingness to part ways with Firewalk, it's interesting to see the company seemingly return to growing its development footprint. But Ryan tells gamesindustry.biz it's far from unexpected. He said, quote, "It's always been our plan to expand and grow strategically since our beginning here at Probably Monsters. We're certainly not immune to the ups and downs of the industry, but we have continued to evaluate and evolve our business, and we make investments where we see an opportunity. We identified early on, which is why we formed Probably Monsters in 2016, that the industry needed a different way to support game developers and new IP to sustain the needs of gamers. It is our mission to unite, guide, and empower developers who are aligned with our vision to make the industry a better place and create amazing games." Ryan adds that having the Probably Monsters central services team supporting the multiple development studios under the company's umbrella allows them to be more than the sum of their parts. Besides, much like Probably Monsters itself, Hidden Grove was around for a while before it made itself known. Hidden Grove general manager Chris Opdahl left Bungie to reunite with Ryan and start up the development team almost 4 years ago. Quote, "We kept the team small and has grown it slowly, both to build and maintain the culture of how we do things differently at Probably Monsters, but also to take the time to explore new ideas and try new things," Ryan says. "Teams often rush and get too big too quickly, which makes team cohesion harder and stifles innovation." Hidden Grove's first project remains unannounced, but the company has said it will be an original multiplayer competitive adventure game built in UE5. I was like thinking about that, like in a multiplayer competitive adventure game. What is that going to be
what
like?
Is an adventure game. I mean, these are also the same people that were involved with Halo, Destiny, Firewalk. I wonder, man, would it be a shooter? I think you would probably say that it was a shooter, right?
I would think so, right? It's competitive. It's like, when, I don't know, when I think competitive, I'm just like immediately shooter, but I don't know, it's probably not accurate. I don't know.
There can be so many things that are competitive, though.
League's competitive. No, it's not a shooter.
StarCraft is competitive. StarCraft, RTS, yeah. We were just talking about that. But if it's an Unreal Engine 5, I would imagine... I don't know, man.
It's a head-scratcher, I'm telling you.
It's probably shooter, because those seem to be the most common. A first person point of view.
Right.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Interesting. Ryan says he tapped Opdahl for the role because he is the kind of leader that highly talented people form a strong bond with. Noting that Hidden Grove's co-founding designing directors, Ryland Deck and Grant McKay, both worked with Opdahl on Destiny. The Hidden Grove leadership team also includes executive producer Lori Ada Kilty, art director Jed. Shivir? I would say Shivir. Shivir? I don't know. Sorry, Jed.
Shabrier?
Senior Engineering Director.
Shabrier, yeah, you got it.
Yeah, Shabrier. Senior Engineering Director Dean Johnson and Narrative Director Kate Welch. In addition to the Hidden Groves news, Probably Monsters announced its new CPO, Chief Product Officer, Adam Reamer. His background crosses a variety of media and entertainment properties, including a five-year run as president of Nerdist Industries, executive stints in the digital operations of Legendary Pictures and Universal Pictures, and more recently serving as CEO of esports outfit Optic Gaming in the early years of the pandemic. But for all the headlines Probably Monsters has made and the talent it has attached, one thing it still lacks 8 years is a shipped game. It's kind of crazy. You're building up all this. Have a game yet, Mike.
That is crazy.
This better be heat. Building up all this stuff and this adventure game needs a hit. You know what I'm saying?
They need it. It's about, they got to produce it now.
Yeah.
They have to. It's probably going to take several more years, though.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
like Unreal Engine 5 is so new. That's why I say that. It's like, that's going to take a year. Like, unless you can just upgrade if you're already doing Unreal Engine 4 and then you can just hit a switch and everything goes to 5. That'd be cool. I don't know.
Yeah, not sure. So they said, quote, "We will remain focused on delivering on our vision and demonstrating our positive approach to game development. This is something I believe in more now more than ever," Ryan says. "Would I like to bring games to market sooner? Absolutely. But our approach is geared to meet our long-term goal of building and developing talented teams to create and deliver exceptional games. As for when we'll start to see the products of that long-term approach, Ryan is non-committal. I can't provide specific timelines yet, but I can say that we remain committed to delivering high-quality games that delight a variety of players. We know everyone is waiting for us to launch a game, and we certainly will, but for now, we continue to prioritize development needs and quality over go-to-market speed. We've got multiple development teams working to deliver their best, which certainly reflects our Hidden Grove and Battle Barge teams for their respective games, and we also have more incubation projects we're constantly supporting. We appreciate the continued support and patience while we remain focused on our goals." I mean, I guess I gotta respect them, right? They're trying to maybe change up the approach, maybe take a little more tender, loving care into some of these projects. Yeah, it's coming up on 8 years, Mike. We're brewing.
I think the message is pretty clear about what he's trying to do. I get it. There's really not much to say about it. I mean, I think 8 years is still a long time to push a game, but it's like... Yeah, if you're doing it and you're trying to prioritize the quality and development needs in your team, I mean, it is what it is. Just as long as you're not scamming people, like I can think about several other game developers that we've talked before about how they release alphas and betas, early accesses for extra money, and then they got microtransactions, and it's like, at least these guys are just trying to develop stuff. They're just working privately, like getting stuff done.
They will not, in fact, interest you in early access, from what it sounds like.
That's what it sounds like. It sounds like they're... I do miss the days when you could just launch a game and it's 100% finished. Maybe there's some bugs. It is what it is.
That's what it is.
We fix
those.
We fix those. But I mean, the core of the game is there.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes the bugs add a little bit of character.
Exactly. If the core is there... You can have a little bit of bugs and it's not going to ruin the experience, right?
Yeah. So. I do think with the economy, like economics of the industry right now and how the layoffs have been, it's like seems to be the talk around the town, you know, we've mentioned so many times, perhaps that is making people be more deliberate and serious with their funds to make sure that they release a game that's complete. I know the indie devs do that, right? Because their money's tight. So they can't afford bad reviews on launch, you know?
Yeah, right. I mean, yeah, it could be really detrimental, so.
Yeah, you could ruin the studio overnight. Done. Yeah, so.
Very true.
What do you think? Do you believe them? Do you think it's an optimistic approach? I mean, with this type of backing and support, I mean, they got to be kind of like a AAA dev in a way.
Yeah, I mean, I think so too, right? I mean, the thing that gives me the most hope, I think, is just the veterans they have and like the people who just...
That's what I mean,
They kind of know how to make games, right? So, I mean, I'd like to be optimistic about this. And I think for the most part, I am. It's like, you know, you have these big, these pretty big names backing it. And you have people kind of just saying, like, I want you guys to just focus on the creativity and just making the game good. And we're in no rush to release it. And I only hope that that's going to, you know, produce a good product. And we'll be hearing about, we'll be praising Hidden Grove in the coming years for making something awesome. And that's all we can hope. But yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, I mean, it seems like there's good people running the studio that kind of, you know, want what's best for their team and kind of just, you know, really just giving people time. So it's awesome to see in here.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is a good article by Brennan. A little bit of something unique, new studio-ish, yeah. Working on something with a better mindset, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah, dude. I'm excited. I'm excited to see that competitive multiplayer adventure game. It's got me intrigued. I need to look up some competitive adventure games after this and see see what I'm missing.
Yeah, I like, if we had to brainstorm, it's probably monsters, right? A bunch of monsters fighting each other.
Yeah,
could you imagine a world like Godzilla, all the different monsters that you can play as?
Destroy all monsters?
Yeah, but it does say original, so yeah. What does that mean?
Yeah, hopefully original creative idea. Oh, no.
Yeah, I remember hearing the stupidest quote like so long ago, and the quote was like, if you're trying to be original, you already aren't.
dang, that's heavy. That's heavy.
It's just it's nuts.
Oh. You know what they say, you know, it's what's the saying, like you copy one person to steal it, but if you copy a bunch of people it's like creativity or something like that. Yeah, it's like, yeah, you copy a bunch of people it's like art or whatever. So I don't know, take your ideas, you know, multiple sources is what we're saying here at the Game 2 podcast.
Yes sir.
But I think, well, it's time we talk about some agreements, renewals.
Oh yeah, okay, well, we always knew there was going to be more and more changes coming for Activision Blizzard, specifically because Microsoft bought them. So here's another one coming from Game Industry News. This is Sophie McAvoy coming in with the article. And the title of the article is Blizzard Renews Agreement with NetEase. And it's funny because Kyle over here said NetEase really quick, and I thought he was saying like Netties.
Netties.
Like, is that a candy? No, NetEase. I literally thought that. I was like, what are you saying to me right now? So Microsoft also forms a partnership with a Chinese firm. Interesting. So there was a lot of outrage. Remember that back in the day with, was it Overwatch? There was an Activision Blizzard game.
Yeah,
where there was like huge outrage because some of the players had like staged a protest over the Taiwan stuff.
Oh, yeah. When that was like, yeah, the Hong really Kong upset protest, stuff like that. Yeah,
yeah. 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 It was Hong Kong. Yeah. It's wild. Yeah, so
crazy.
Yeah, let's get into this. Another little short article for everybody. So Sophie wrote that Blizzard Entertainment has renewed its publishing agreement with NetEase, which is set to begin this summer. Microsoft has also entered an agreement with the games firm to bring NetEase titles to Xbox consoles and other platforms. Not really surprising, to be honest. Blizzard and NetEase had previously been in partnership for 14 years, which came to an end in 2022 as both companies failed to negotiate renewal of this agreement. During that time, NetEase handled the publishing rights of Blizzard titles such as World of Warcraft, Overwatch, Diablo, and StarCraft. And this is a quote from, let's see, President of Blizzard Entertainment, Johanna Ferries. So we've covered before, have we not? I think that was a recent short. Yeah,
that was posted like yesterday or today.
It really was. Shout out to Kyle for posting these awesome shorts for us. So yeah, go check it out on YouTube, by the way. Anyway, so the quote is, we are thrilled to reestablish our partnership with NetEase and to work together with deep appreciation for the collaboration between our teams to deliver legendary gaming experiences to players in China. And the quote continues, we are immensely grateful for the passion the Chinese community has shown for Blizzard games throughout the years, and we're focused on bringing our universes back to players with excellence and dedication. Xbox CEO Phil Spencer has added, Blizzard and NetEase have done incredible work to renew our commitment to players. Blizzard's universes have been part of players' lives in the region for many years. Returning Blizzard's legendary games to players in China while exploring ways to bring more new titles to Xbox demonstrates our commitment to bringing more games to more players around the world. Not very surprising that Phil Spencer would definitely try to... The man has basically been trying to get as many players as possible on Xbox titles, regardless of the device and platform.
Yep.
So it only makes sense that they're going to try to renew a partnership with NetEase, who essentially is, I guess, in charge of all gaming connections with China. So let me give you some context here. NetEase is a internet company, is a Chinese internet technology company providing online services centered around content, community communications, and commerce. The company was founded in 1997, and NetEase develops and operates online PC, mobile games, advertising services, email services, and e-commerce platforms in China. So it's kind of like the gateway to online gaming.
That sounds like that's why, yeah. I guess that's why there was so much kind of controversy whenever this like deal seemingly ended. It's like, oh, are these games going to be available in China? It's like, you know, it seemed like those doors were closing, but I mean, yeah, it's, you know, it's good, I guess, that, you know, came to an agreement, get games out to more people. I think it's awesome. I think it's really cool. Yeah, I mean, the Joanna Fairies Fairs, I just like, I saw that and I was like, oh, wait, we just, yeah, we talked about that. And it was funny. I went back and kind of watched that segment too when I was making that short. And it was just like, it's, there hasn't, unfortunately, there's not really been too many crazy developments since she's become president. It's kind of just been like, you know, kind of business as usual, really. So
yeah, I'm sure they're not trying to shake too much stuff up because Xbox is still trying to finalize everything with Activision Blizzard. So it's all very new, I would imagine. So it's like reestablishing partnerships. This is the biggest news that we've seen so far.
Yeah.
And I guess her whole thing was the franchise leagues of where she started.
Right, yeah.
Like originally with the NFL and then branched into actual franchise leagues like Call of Duty League and Overwatch now. So we'll see what comes of it. This is obviously not done. I'm sure that they're thinking, well, we need the players. There's a lot of players in China that are big in StarCraft, so we need the players.
Yep. I'll never forget the famous Bad Mike quote that is more relevant now than ever, considering CDL and OWL is just kind of no more.
Oh,
CDL will never work. You're like, CDL will never work. That was like, that was your quote. And I was like, sure enough, like here we are. Like CDL is like crumbling and OWL's no more, and it's like,
So HCS is the next one to fall. Mark my words. Halo Championship Series is done.
And this
is going to be the last year.
Yeah.
I'm pretty convinced on it.
I'm not going to argue with that. It's very true.
Dude, opening tournament, they had 52 teams total. That includes pro pool play brackets. They have rampant cheaters in the game right now.
Yep.
There are people flying around.
It's gotten worse with easy anti-cheat.
Well, everybody knew it was going to get worse. Easy anti-cheat has never worked. There's been cheaters on Master Chief Collection forever. The reason why people never cared is because Halo 3 is 15 years old. Who's playing that? like really? I mean, there's people that are actually playing it for sure. And I know there's going to be one or two people that are like, I play it all the time. It's like, dude, the vast majority of people don't really play. Like, there's millions upon millions of gamers. We're not playing Halo.
No.
They're playing COD. They're playing Fortnite. They're playing Minecraft.
Playing COD, getting shadow banned, facing the ray gun in multiplayer. Like, it's just wild, dude.
At least COD knows what they're doing, trolling cheaters. But I digress. What do you think about this whole situation with the Blizzard and NetEase? Do you think it's a good thing? Do you think it's a bad thing? Do you have any opinion at all? Like,
I think it's net positive, right? You know, getting games over to China, and that China market's huge. And I know back when, you know, we weren't sure if this deal was going to continue, it's like, I mean, China's a huge market, especially for Blizzard games. So it's like, you don't have that. It's, you know, there's certainly financial implications with that if you don't get games over there. So, it's overall a huge win. Like I said, it's kind of, this is something after the settling of that deal with Activision Blizzard and Xbox happened. This is kind of like the, you know, we're starting to, you know, the dominoes are starting to fall into that generation of, you know, merger. So, it makes sense to me.
I think, that's actually probably the best way to put it, the best analogy, like the dominoes are starting to fall into place.
Yeah, so. For sure. You know Xbox.
Well, speaking of Xbox, Mr. Phil Spencer making moves, we got another one for you. And about, you let the people know.
Let's talk about it. This can be a bit of a lengthy article. I mean, I'll try to kind of go through it as fast as I can, and we may not have to read the whole thing, but listen. This is a piece released by IGN. Dustin Legree. I'm gonna say Legree. I like that.
I like it too.
Xbox isn't the only one rethinking console exclusives. PlayStation, and to a lesser extent Nintendo, are thinking beyond hardware. It's 2024 and games are more expensive than ever. Publishers are taking fewer risks and layoffs are rampant. As the most front-facing of the big three gaming executives, Xbox CEO Phil Spencer sat down for an interview to lament the current state of the video game space. How does this industry get back to growth? Was the resounding question he left this recent interview with Polygon. It's clear that console sales aren't seeing the growth that even leaders in this regard would like. PlayStation is porting games to PC via Steam. Xbox is expanding its release strategies to include Steam, PlayStation, and Nintendo. It's becoming clear that there's seemingly a consensus between PlayStation and Xbox that the entire industry is going through a recalibration.
Yep.
Starting with console exclusives, in quotes. The recalibration has been accelerated thanks to a massive wave of layoffs that have oiled the video game industry. We covered the impact of these layoffs. IGN covered them. And we've also covered them on this show. Plenty of times.
Multiple times, yeah. You know,
it's hard to avoid. I'll skip a little bit ahead. The entire industry is resetting to its commercial reality, with some companies realizing that they have overexpanded, become unfocused in their strategies, and become more overstretched financially. Here's Hardling Rolls of the Ampere Analytics. By now, it's widely known that there are two primary culprits for the recent wave of layoffs. COVID, it ties
into overhiring.
I mean, yeah, it's you know, we talked about this too in an article recently, and you know, it may have been some of the articles, probably a lot of the same points could be referred to in this one that were referred to in that one, but it's like, you know, between COVID, overhiring, economy, high interest rates, like there's a lot of different factors that kind of just all came together. And so as a result, Spencer says it's clear we'll be seeing a shift in the coming years away from console exclusives to mitigate the losses in revenue everyone has been reporting. The impact of the revenue needed to break even on $300 million budgets has had devastating consequences in the form of mass layoffs. Going forward, I believe the industry is not done yet seeing layoffs. We'll see further bad news through 2024. Again, that's what we discussed too as well.
Spoilers.
Yeah, PlayStation, Xbox, and EA have drastically reduced their staff, making headlines at every major gaming publication. Embracer not only saw layoffs, but they saw spinning out their recent acquisitions like Gearbox and new owners. While Spencer is the latest to limit the negative impacts of budgets and layoffs have on the entire games industry, highlighting a risk-averse publisher market, rising AAA game creation costs, and flatlining console business, it's clear to him that things need to drastically change. PlayStation seems to agree as they've slashed console sale predictions for 2024, 25 to 21 million, which I think we actually covered briefly.
We did.
Highlighting plans to be more aggressive with PlayStation game releases on PC. All of this is an effect of the games industry as we know it, and more specifically, the console business. While PlayStation still champions the value of exclusive releases on its consoles, they've slowly but surely adopting a more aggressive PC release strategy as well. A notable statement during Sony's Q3 earnings call, Hiroki Totoki said, in the past, as we all know, we wanted to popularize consoles. First-party titles' main purpose was to make the console popular. There is a synergy to it. So if we have strong first-party content, not only will our console, but also our other platforms like computers, first-party content can be grown multi-platforms, and that can help operating profit to improve. So this is another way we want to proactively work on.
That's crazy. That is basically the same thing Phil Spencer said 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago with Xbox. And it's nuts to see that. It was the same one where he famously said that their Microsoft Xbox is no longer interested in selling consoles. He said basically the same thing.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So Mike, are you telling me that Xbox is Android and PlayStation is Apple? Like, everything is a couple years behind, get some features a little later, get some ideas a little later than the other. It's like,
yeah,
a little delay and things.
And everybody that has a PlayStation will die on the sword that PlayStation's better than Xbox. Meanwhile, people on Xbox just don't care.
Come on,
people
on
Xbox
ponies.
Have been on a PC. People on Xbox have been on a PC for years now. Yeah, come on, guys. Come on, hold on. Let me talk the way you like. Come on, guys. Come meet me. Talking through for people that only have the audio. I'm talking through the
controller. PlayStation controller. It's crazy. Jeez. But this is the first time PlayStation has brought up a shifting perspective. head of PlayStation Studios Herman Holst to also discuss the importance of PC in May of 23, calling it a substantial part of the PlayStation business. Jim Ryan echoed those sentiments on the same call, saying our PC business is a significant profit contributor. Parting roles of Ampere Analytics dives in a bit deeper. Clearly, the macroeconomic backdrop will have contributed to companies looking to streamline their operations, cut their costs, reduce commercial risk, and cut investments. This is inevitable in the current climate and is relevant to all industries. He continues to cite wage inflation and increasing costs of game design as reasons many studios have started looking into the safest route forward, which will also mean a more risk-averse market for a few years. One big budget game getting canceled can lead to hundreds of layoffs, according to Pierce.
Yeah.
All these changes will reshape the industry and games we play for years to come. Gamers want more access to more places, and both Xbox and PlayStation are ready to appease the request to meet their ballooning budgets, albeit in different ways. For Xbox, it's releasing the former console exclusives on rival hardware. PlayStation is ramping up its PC porting business. That could mean fewer console exclusives as hardware sales forecasts are reduced, but more ways to play the games we love. While pure console exclusives still go some way towards driving console sales, more so for Nintendo than others, it has become clear that gamers now expect to be able to play games on a variety of devices. Daniel Ahmed, Nico's director of research and insights, tells us, even in Japan, where the console has traditionally been dominant, and 41% of gamers played a console game in the past year, only 14% of all gamers exclusively play on console, according to our 2023 survey of Japanese gamers. Even in Japan. Ooh. In Japan.
I'm sure that also includes, like, your mobile phone, because mobile phone gaming has gone through the roof. You know, right. I think in terms of, like, the PlayStation Xbox whole setup, I don't think Nintendo's really going to go into that metric of let's get off the console. I think they're just going to keep doing these hybrid kind of scenarios where you can literally just pick up the tablet and walk away with it. That's the Switch. I think that's going to be their model going forward. Whatever type of innovation they can do, they're probably going to innovate with VR. I think that's going to be their bread and butter soon. Nothing really has indicated, there's no teasers or rumors, but I would imagine that the most like innovative company when it comes to doing new things for console-based stuff, like think about the Wii, think about the GameCube and the different discs, like they're always trying to do something new. I think Nintendo is going to go that route, but I think we're going to get to the point where Xbox is going to have a similar branding to like Disney, where sometimes you don't even realize you're watching or consuming a Disney product because they own so much stuff.
Yeah, it's
very true. Like Disney still gets their paycheck, and I think Xbox is going to go that route with really Microsoft too. Just they're going to end up owning so many studios, so many games that they're not going to care what platform, what device you use. They already don't really care. And people aren't even going to notice they're playing an Xbox game anymore. Whereas I think PlayStation might just be more brand heavy. Do you think that might be the case too?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Definitely more brand reliant, I'd say. I could see a day where you could play a game and at the very end on like the credit screen, you see all the products and it's like Xbox Studios or whatever. It's like, whoa.
Oh, for sure.
Which is, you don't expect it. Like they don't even put it on the front cover of the game. It's just like in credits. Like it's that insignificant. Yeah. So
that's what I mean.
Yeah, for sure. Continuing on, players getting more access to more options on how to play is amazing news for customers. Porting to PC and mobile isn't a new strategy. It's happening at a much faster rate, and it will have a drastic impact on the console market and how we consume games in the future. Console platform holders have embraced a broader strategy over the past few years and will continue doing so with the aim of reaching gamers on non-console platforms. Ahmed tells IGN. And recent comments from Phil Spencer seem to indicate an incredibly aggressive approach in this respect. Rumors are swirling of an Xbox handheld that will be more open to services like Epic Games having a place on it, and hopefully services like Steam. A strategy that aims to tear down the walled garden approach the industry has used in the console business for years. Harding Rolls added, all console players now have strategies in place to reach broader audiences with their services, games, and IP. Out of the three companies, Microsoft has been the quickest and most active in evolving its strategy, largely because it has had a more acute need to look for growth beyond its console businesses.
Facts.
Even Nintendo is branching away, albeit in a different way through theme parks and movies. It's actually true,
Okay. I want to go to Universal Studios so bad. Go to Mario World, Nintendo World, or whatever they're calling it.
Yeah, very true. Even Nintendo, so think of it this way. You don't need to own a Nintendo Switch to go to Universal Studios or watch the upcoming Legend of Zelda live action movie.
Oh, dude, I hope it is. Please.
Oh, please. Please. That's like a bang, dude. What was that? Anyway, console platform holders have embraced a broader strategy over the past few years and will continue doing so with the aim of reaching gamers on non-console platforms. This has taken various forms, with Nintendo expanding to movies and theme parks, PlayStation expanding to PC, and Xbox expanding to cloud, and more recently, other consoles. We're all embracing everything. Nintendo said, give me that IRL. That's what Nintendo said. And everyone else just like...
That's what I think. That's why I was trying to say. I think the VR stuff is the next step for Nintendo.
Yeah.
I think Nintendo's going to, like, they're going to put it in their theme park, their theme section, Universal Studios, where you can be on those what are they called? The platforms that you can stand on, be stationary, but you can, like, physically walk.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like they'll give you a headset. Yeah. Like, yeah. That would be so cool, dude.
That would be pretty sick.
Make me Mario. Make me Mario.
make me Waluigi so I can be tall, sir. Oh man. Okay. And to his point, Toto points out the console sales have remained flat for everyone. Looking back at the last several years, it's easy to see that Xbox and PlayStation console audience is not growing. The data backs it up. No console, not even the highly successful Nintendo Switch, has managed to surpass the 155 million units the PS2 sold as of 2012. In over 20 years, the closest was the DS, Nintendo DS, yeah, which capped out at around 154 million units. Even the Nintendo Switch that everyone points at as the bar for success seems to be gearing up for a successor is currently sitting just shy of 140 million units sold. And how will this
one thing to note there?
Okay.
That the 140 million units sold, I mean, granted, it's a, 15 million units difference between the PS2 and the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah.
The PS2 was selling for a long time.
A
long, long time. I think it was you could even buy it in PS4 without. it was nuts.
Yeah.
So maybe not that long, but you know what I'm trying to say here. The Switch hasn't been out that long. Not really.
Yeah, 7 years? Like that?
Yeah, so I think that's why it's so successful, I guess. What do you think might be another contributing part why everything's been staying stagnant before we move on?
I don't know.
Console sales.
I mean, PCs have just the thing, it's just crazy how easy and accessible it is to get a PC that is just as powerful, if not more powerful than a console now, right?
Less money sometimes. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, it's way more accessible than ever. Like, it may be a slightly higher investment up front, but I think overall, just like having something to play your games on, but you can also use it as entertainment, and you can also use it in other aspects, productivity. Like,
yeah,
there's a lot of uses you can get out of making your own PC now, that you can't get from a console, obviously. And so, I mean, even if you want to do like couch gaming, right? Like, you can get a wireless controller, Bluetooth, hook up a PC or something like that. It doesn't have to be a super powerful PC in like your living room, right? And you can just kind of, hook it up to your Steam and you're off to the races. So I personally think like the PC being more accessible and more popular has certainly kind of like suffocated console sales for the most part.
I think you're right there.
Reason why Nintendo does so good is because we talked about it with they've had the same strategy since Wii and GameCube, of that kind of blue ocean strategy where it's like they make these games tailored to this device that are not only exclusive to it, but it's just like they've created this world that is it's a new experience, but also it's like these characters and these worlds are like available and
they're
fun for everyone.
Interlinked.
They're interlinked.
Not only that, but there's like there's cross pollination between all the different games. Like, Super Smash Bros. Is an amazing concept. It's like you get to all your heroes from the Nintendo universe can all be combined and played like at the same time. That's amazing. And you can also do that with like Mario Party. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Like the Mario universe, and they all play with each other. It's fascinating stuff. I think that's something that a lot of the other companies you just can't do, really. I mean, I guess you've seen it with Soul Calibur, but...
Yeah. I mean, we kind of see... Warner Brothers, I think, of multiverses. It's like the closest thing to like a collab.
True.
But then that didn't do so well, and so now they're relaunching it. Anyway,
it's you know, one quick thing, and then we'll just like wrap up because there's really not much more to the article. There, I think one thing about the lack of console sales in comparison to the past is the number one like dream job for young kids to young adults is to be a YouTuber or content creator. And you can't do that unless you have a proper computer. Like you can do that's it with true. Like laptops, but that's the entry drug, you know? It's like everybody gets their laptop first and they're just like, oh, this is nice. It's like 30 frames per second playing Rocket League. This is sick, dude. Yep. It's like, yeah. And then you go to your buddy's house who has a real PC setup and you're like, oh, okay, I see what 144 frames per second is. And I'm gonna I'm saving up. I'm gonna,
yep. Yeah. Dude, that was my path. That was my path. So you start off on a
when
I was like a young teenager, I got a laptop and then kind of working up and then all the way until college when I was able to finally afford a PC, I was like, I dove head first and the rest is history.
Dude, for me, it was just getting a desk. It's like, I got to get a desk before I can even build the PC and they got the desk. It's like, now I need a chair. It's like the entry level like activity.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, but sorry to cut you off. We were at and how will this impact you?
Yeah. So I was kind of skimming through that a little bit while you were talking, and kind of because what you were saying is, and like what we were talking about was very much the case, right? Like the expansion of PC and mobile certainly has a part to play in that.
100%.
Yeah, mobile especially. I mean, has a part to play in kind of lower things, but also what we've talked about too is like the cost of creating a AAA game now has increased substantially. The time, not even financially, but just the time investment to actually make these games. It's bigger than it ever has
been.
5 years
minimum.
I mean, it's way bigger than it ever has been. So those are certainly contributing factors. They talk about the price increase of console games, 60 to 70. I mean, I know we talked about it too. It's like, is that really significant? I don't know. But I mean, it certainly is a reason behind. I guess it gives them enough reason to say like, hey, these games are so expensive to make now and it takes so long. It's like, kind of need some, you know, they're trying to make up some cost, I guess, somewhere. A little bit further down the article, kind of just the last couple paragraphs here, I think it's worth mentioning. So revenue-wise, there will always be a place for a console. Console represents around 1/3 of the total global spend on video game software and services, which shows the opportunity for console platform holders when expanding to mobile and PC. In fact, the contrast is even more pronounced in Asia, and MENA, where over 90% of player spending is generated on non-console platforms, Daniel Amen tells us. And Rolls backs him up by saying, none of the companies can afford to exit the console market as a platform holder without significantly reducing their game's revenue. So I expect them to all remain committed to the console market for years to come. There is a chance we will have Microsoft and Sony focusing a lot more on handheld and the cloud, especially after how the Steam Deck revealed there is a high demand for high fidelity gaming on the go. And then everyone else is making these handhelds. Mike, we got that Lenovo Legion Go. We got that ROG Ally. We got the Logitech G Cloud, like the list goes on. Yeah.
There's so many. Like we've covered all of them too. Those videos hit, by the way.
Yeah. The 50 million.
So people are interested.
Yeah. What is that studio that makes like one handheld and then moves on to the next thing? They're on like 50 million projects. I forget the company was.
A&EO.
Like, A&EO. Yeah. A&EO. It's like, yeah, A&EO, right?
Like, make it. I had to use my brain blast. I was like,
gotta go back. What popped? Yeah. So, for today, finish of the article. For today, however, one thing is clear. Change is coming. Change is here.
Yep.
More games in more places and a better value for the gamer is a huge win. Console exclusives may become less and less common, but if that means these companies are going to create more options for you, I'm all for it. And us here at the M2 Podcast are always all for it, especially Game Pass, baby.
Big fan, dude. Big fan.
It's like, yeah, this is a future gaming, Mike, you know. The handheld, the handheld is back. I think maybe, perhaps. If Xbox gets in, I think it's be able to help.
I feel like I would like an Xbox handheld, but I don't even know if I would be that interested, to be honest.
That's fair, yeah.
So it would be pretty sick just to experience all the different games that I could possibly experience.
I think it's cool, like PlayStation Portal, right? It's not, you know, on the go handheld, but like just from all the videos you're seeing and all the people, like they're quietly releasing updates too that are actually making it better. And it's like people like, you know, even if you're not home and you're using it on someone on like a separate Wi-Fi or something like that, it's still like remarkably good, I think, better than people expected. So maybe that's like Sony's kind of maybe that could be Sony's like key to be like, hey, maybe we should, you know, dive back in and do something in the handheld space again. But I don't know.
Yeah, true. I think one of the funny things that can end up happening, or a breakout in the space, could be Samsung, or what do you call it, Apple. If they can make attachments that will actually be really good and connect on the phone, like to expand everything into like a tablet, like a true tablet, it's over. You know, it'd be so cool.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Maybe the phone manufacturers get more involved.
Yeah,
that'd be pretty sick. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. There, this is the thing. A lot to be excited about. End of the day, the gaming industry.
Yeah.
How dire it's been, and how just crappy it's been overall in the past like year, especially from like a developer standpoint. From all that, it's like, hopefully as this levels out, we can start looking ahead and kind of seeing, you know, what, you know, all these games taking longer to make. It's like, it gets more and more imperative and critical that you make a good game, right? So it's like, maybe I'd like to think, this is very optimistic, I'd like to think that, like, since it's taking longer to make games, if big studios really stop and think about their choices as they are in the development process, say, like, would this really work? Would this not really work? Let's take a look at games in our kind of genre and see, like, what works and what doesn't. Maybe take some ideas and kind of
combine them all.
Creatively make your own. I don't know. It's very optimistic, but I would like to think that maybe, you know, maybe we'll be more, studios will be more intentional about what they make, so we actually make better products.
True. I think it's just pretty cool that, I don't know, I think this episode in particular has been more optimistic than the past, because the past we've just been having to report. I mean, dude, all that was in the news was all of this, all these layoffs and how terrible that is. So now that we're seeing more and more that's actually good and more optimistic, it's a good feeling to really end on, you know?
Sure is. It sure is. Yeah. I think overall, that positive on the news, most part, right? This week.
Yeah.
I mean, the first week. You know, first article, unfortunately, sorry for little Joey, you know? That's unfortunate. Hopefully parents learned their lessons. And hopefully people can take away from that. Be like, hey, just keep an eye on, keep
take
an eye
accountability.
On, keep an eye on the spending. You know what I'm saying? Like, open the account up every day, you know? See what's going on.
Yeah. Stay up to date. Well, unfortunately, man, I got some people over at the house, and we got to wrap it up. It's also dinner time, so.
Well, guess what, Mike? That's all the articles I had, baby. That's it.
Yeah, my man.
Worked out.
Perfect. Well, I guess we'll do the typical closeout. You know, for the longtime listeners, you already know. If you're new here, we appreciate you. Thank you for tuning in, both of you guys. And all the links are in the description below. They cover every single article that we've mentioned. So give credits down there to all the different resources. We also have social media links. We have a link for Discord if you want to join. Like, talk a little bit to us. Whatever you want to do. We appreciate you. And, also we're on every single audio platform, too. If you're only seeing us on YouTube, you want us on the go, just search us, M2 Podcast, and you'll find us. Yep. You got anything to add, Kyle, before we say goodbye?
I don't think so. It's a positive week. Keep gaming. Middle of April. We're vibing.
All right, cool. Judo. All right. Thank you guys for coming. We appreciate you. Thank you for listening. Michael Antony, this is Kyle Heath, and this has been the M2 Podcast. See you next week. Peace out.
Bye, everyone.
And keep on gaming.
Keep on gaming.